Hello and welcome to Culture with me, Robert Bound, where this week we're exploring contemporary photography through the lens, if you'll allow, of this year's Deutsche Börse Photography Foundation Prize. Last week in central London, the Photographers' Gallery threw open their doors to reveal the nominees for this year's prize. In its 21st year, the prize seeks to find innovation and bold messages in contemporary photography from around the world and explores what photography is or could be. This isn't just photographs hung on walls, although there's a bit of that. Much of this work is multimedia practice that serves as documentation of a political, social, or artistic project. So, some of the work at this year's prize starts from photography and ends up as something a bit different, and some of it starts as a desire to document something, and it turns out that the best way to do that is photography. The four finalists of this year's award are the New Zealander Luke Willis-Thompson, the Swiss artist Batia Suter, Poland's Rafael Milach, and the French Venezuelan Mathieu Asselin. On the programme today, I'll meet three of those artists, as well as the curator of the exhibition, Anna Dannemann, to find out, why not, the state of contemporary photography. First, here is curator Anna Dannemann to give us a little background and talk about Luke Willis-Thompson's very fine work.
Normally, the prize is actually not themed, of course. We are celebrating photography in all its varied forms, and we are really aiming to show a kind of huge variety of photography rather than a specific theme. But this year, it came together in a kind of that there is an overarching theme, which is really the production of knowledge and how knowledge is kind of situated within visual culture, how in our contemporary culture we can make out certain themes and certain topics through images, and how we can learn from them what we know already, how we can perceive things differently through images. And so I think that is really the overarching theme this time around.
Obviously, there are images aplenty on the walls, Anna, but a lot of the four artists that you're featuring this year on the shortlist for the prize have taken the idea of images and photography and kind of taken them for a very long walk in certain cases. So we don't see in certain artists' work, Luke Willis-Thompson, his work, it kind of takes a photograph or it takes a Facebook live stream and then takes imagery from that and plays around with that in an unreal way, in a very real but an unreal way. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about, for example, Luke's work this year.
Well, Luke Willis-Thompson has started his project in 2016, really, and it was a project he was commissioned by Chisenhall Gallery and Create to find an image or produce a kind of a project that would engage the public, that would situate his own work within kind of contemporary streams and contemporary ideas and topics. And what he has done is look at the case of Diamond Reynolds. Diamond Reynolds had the horrendous experience of sitting in a car and then being stopped by a police officer. Next to her was her partner, Philando Castile. In the back was her four-year-old girl. And the police officer stopped them and, through a kind of miscommunication, understood that Philando had a gun in his car, thought in some ways threatened, and shot him. And she, Diamond Reynolds, right afterwards took out her phone and broadcasted herself and kind of in this aftermath of this horrendous experience that she went through. Then it was circulated wildly in the media, within social media as well, and it just had this impact. And what Luke tried to do is kind of create a response to that really horrendous kind of work and FaceTime broadcast that he found within these kind of being shared so much, and he found that what happened to her face in this kind of autoportrait and how it was kind of taken out of context was very challenging, and he just wanted to create something where she would kind of be herself in a different way. She would be herself not in this kind of catastrophe that is kind of happening around her, but more in a still, silent, beautiful space. So what he has done is shot a very long 35 millimeter film black and white film, silent film portrait of her, which is projected hugely on the gallery walls. And you see her face, diamond face, moving really slowly, moving really emotionally, and you kind of interpret all of these emotions that might have run through her head in this, also this shocking moment into her face. And it's this intimate relationship that you then have with her in that moment in the gallery spaces.
And it seems that the artist is allowing her, Diamond, to take ownership over her image again. So there is an interesting play on image, that it isn't this, as you say, this kind of live FaceTime, Facebook sort of catastrophe, online catastrophe happening. There is something beautiful, noble. There is something of kind of classical portraiture about this. I found it interesting, I don't know what you think about this, Anna, that the fact that he's used this clunky, old, quite handsome, but needlessly huge and noisy 35mm film projector to show the image of Diamond. There's something about machinery and ownership and something old-fashioned about that. I wonder what you feel the artist is doing with the machinery he's using.
I feel that the machinery, because it is quite loud, it kind of pressures you into being quiet as well as she is quiet, and really focus on that apparatus kind of noise and on her face. You also, you have a kind of more direct connection to the images because you see the film running through the wheels and then being projected. You know where it's coming from. You have a kind of direct kind of instance here, while within social media, you have this digitally kind of framed work, a film that you can see in whatever way you perceive it in that moment, but here it's very guided.
And it's very, and this is the antithesis of the portable, of the instant, of something that you have streaming on your mobile phone anywhere around the world. This is something you have to come to the fifth floor of the Photographer's Gallery here in London to see and interact with, right?
Yeah, and he was very protective of her image in that way as well. He didn't want it to be shown and circulated wildly anywhere else through this project. He really wants people to come and experience it in the space because it's such an immersive installation.
At least a couple of the artists, the work is based on publications. Mm-hmm. Are these what you would call photo books? Are these kind of artist monographs? Mm-hmm. So maybe you could give our listeners an idea of kind of where they sit in kind of terms of art book publishing.
So two of the artists have been nominated for their artist book. One is Bhatia Sutia, who has been publishing beautiful books since 2006. She has been working really closely with Roma Publishing, which is based in Amsterdam, also very acclaimed for their photo books, and kind of funnily also published the last year's winners, Dana Lixenberg's book. So they are a fantastic publisher and very well known within the photographic photo book scene. And what we have tried, because Bhatia works in a way that she uses sourced material, so she's not photographing herself, but she has a collection of thousands of books, magazines, a lot of the times something that you wouldn't necessarily call photographic, like diagrams, and really where kind of the production of knowledge is seen, research-based books, basically. And she takes these diagrams, photos, objects out of this specific context and places them in new varying contexts. And therefore, kind of the images live by themselves within the kind of image work and to their own understanding and their own knowledge and their own production. Mathieu Asselin, who's nominated for the photo book, has done a very different kind of approach. So rather than sitting by himself in his studio, he has gone out and traveled around the US and Vietnam to find these places affected by Monsanto and photographed places, landscapes, nature, and people that have really felt what Monsanto can do in its kind of power system. We also have Rafael Miller, who's very well known for his photo books as well. He has been nominated for an exhibition that he has done in Łódź, but he is very well known for kind of more aesthetically led publications and photo books as well. So you can see a variety of photo books and what can be done with the kind of publications here in the space as well.
Next stop, let's head to the fifth floor of the Photographer's Gallery, where we'll find those two projects, the work of Luke Willis Thompson and also the work of Matthew Aslam. The latter's is a weighty thing. Aslam has been nominated for his book Monsanto, A Photographic Investigation, and takes the huge agrochemical firm to task in unflinching style. Aslam's work is a crusade against a company that's poisoned farmland, administered the Vietnam War's Agent Orange, and is now at the forefront of selling the world genetically modified seeds, the DNA of which is near impossible to get out of the soil once it's gone in. In a very worthwhile way, Aslam is a man possessed.
I knew about the Monsanto story through my father. He told me one day about the problem with the farmers and the lawsuits in the Midwest in the United States. So I became very interested in that story, and little by little, exploring, researching, I realized that the story was much bigger than that. That is a corporation that have 116, 17 years old. And through all this history, a lot of things happen. It means that it has a very dark history. So my idea was to portray this history and to show the past and a little bit of the present of Monsanto to kind of understand what is going as a corporation.
And maybe we can talk about some of the work, some of the images that you've shot yourself, that you've worked on, that are in the book and that surround us here in this room. Because some of the stuff you've appropriated, news imagery, cuttings from newspapers, etc., and obviously some portraits of farmers and different people that have been affected, and landscapes and falling down houses in some of the states of the United States. Maybe you can tell us about your point of view, your prerogative as a photographer in this, what you're trying to set out.
The book really is set as a timeline that shows the most, what I saw is the most important keystones in Monsanto contamination line and all this. So like that we can have an idea of the story, because the story is quite broad, quite huge. So I need to concentrate in certain chapters. Now, the important thing on this book, I mean, this work, before anything, is a book. And for me, it was very important to make sure that the story, people understand the story and the complexity of the story. This is why I'm not only photographing myself, but I'm as well appropriating documents, objects, press clips, video. So in this way, I hope I did, to build a story with multiple layers. It's not just a flat story, but it's a story who has many, many different layers. So the idea, of course, I photograph myself. I travel across the United States, meeting these people affected, from farmers in the Midwest that are being huge lawsuits against them. Maybe if they were not responsible of the GMO seeds in their crops. But also I photograph children of a American veteran from Vietnam, people who live in places completely contaminated, like in Anniston in Alabama. So yes, it's a mix of these two things. Now, it's important to understand that what we are presenting, I say we are, is because Sergio Valenzuela Escobedo, the curator of this exhibition, that I work very close to him. So what we're trying to present here is a new chapter. And it's a new chapter that I wanted to add from the beginning, but I didn't do it. I couldn't find a way of doing it. And we think that this exhibition is the best place, and it's the chapter 5 about the stock market. So in this chapter, we're talking a little bit about that. Of course, I've been nominated for my book. My book is bigger than just the stock market, but we saw that it was a good idea to present that work here today.
So you're presenting the new chapter 5, and this isn't in the book, but it is what you're presenting here. And in fact, you've done newsprint that we can see. There's a kind of good, it looks like a suitcase of dollar bills, like in a heist movie, very handsome on the floor here. And this focuses on the acquisition of Monsanto by Bayer, the big German chemicals company. And again, you kind of quite selflessly, for a photographer, for an artist, you've appropriated a lot of news imagery there. What's the balance in the book and in terms of this new chapter 5 in terms of original photography and original work that you've done and the sort of artistic thought process of appropriating other news imagery and using it to your own ends, Mathieu?
Yeah, I mean, I think the base of, I mean, the most important thing of using image, even if it's mine or not, is to tell the story in the right way and in the most effective ways possible. So the difference between my images and the appropriated images, they're not such a difference. I mean, one, of course, I photograph them, I set them up. Here, what we're trying to show is how my pictures, they're not only used in galleries and in museums,
yeah,
but also the press use my pictures to denunciate Monsanto. So this is how my work don't stay only in galleries and museums, but how it can go a little bit beyond that. It's used for the press, it's used for the fight against Monsanto. So this is why we decide not to put the original prints, but to use the clips of the newspapers. And this is all related to the stock market, how the news influenced the stock market, how, so it's all interconnected. This is why we use that. But the important thing, I am, as a photographer, of course, I'm a photographer. I love to take pictures. This is something I really enjoy. But I'm more mostly interested in the way the stories are constructed. So I really don't have a big differentiation between what the pictures I take or what are the documents I take. What I see is the whole story, a bird's view of the story. And whatever can help to build that story, I will use it. So I don't have this is my images, these are archivals. No, it's a part of the same thing. As the same, for example, this little box where you put the money if you take a newsprint, this is a part of the thing. And I think it's there when things become very interesting, when you kind of separate yourself from your photography and a little bit from your ego as a photographer, and you really start playing with whatever is necessary to do your work, to say what you need to say. So yeah, there is a difference, of course. One, I took it, the other ones I didn't, but they're helping to tell the same story, and they are collaborating these two different images to tell one thing, that is the story about Monsanto.
The Swiss artist Matthias Suter is also nominated for a book titled Parallel Encyclopedia No. 2. It presents found photographs, often scientific, botanical or related to engineering, or something like a lithograph lifted from a history book on knights and dragons. It's a mixed bag, this book, and works by weaving a spell of subtle association between images, themes and patterns, linking the seemingly alien or opposite. Here is Matthias Suter.
Yes, this is a kind of pop-up chapter of the Parallel Encyclopedia 2, a book I made in 2016. Most of them are very old images, so I have all the books where the images are from, so I'm collecting old books for a long time, and then I scan the images, and what is very interesting is which image is I'm using, or that is actually it's a kind of investigation which image is strong enough to that have a kind of soul of why is that happening, and I work on them, and yeah, the difference in the book is that you go through it and then you are working with your you remember them, so you make a line with remembering what was on the page before, and in the space, it's you are really surrounded and your eyes are jumping from one to the other. So it's a kind of parkour of images, of old images, and the constellation, how I use them is like you can wake them up, because they are very old, very dated, very...
So these are kind of dormant images that you've kind of electrified back into life, yes, like some sort of yes, publishing yes, photography Dr. Frankenstein.
Yes, maybe.
The pictures in the book are credited. We sort of know where they came from. Do you care who took these images, or are the images just the things themselves. They don't really need to, no one needs to take ownership over them. Because when we think of photography, we often think of people being credited for it. There is an idea of ownership, an idea of fame, certainly, about some certain photographers and people that use photography. You've used, you're kind of taking all the labels and names off things and appropriating images in a very different way to how most people understand photography. Is that fair to say of your practice, that you're kind of opening it up?
Yeah, that's true. That what for me, it's I'm rescuing images because they all come from very old books. They are throwing away, and very often I find the books. I don't buy them. Just I put them from the floor on flea markets when they are over and they are wet and So for my feeling, I really I adopt the images. But of course it's a very relevant question at the moment. So with the copyright, or if it's allowed, if people like that you use the images. So it's impossible to find back the makers of the pictures in most of the situations. And so then I can't ask them. And then I always think I guess they would be happy to be in that context with the image. Better than the book is just destroyed and the image is lost.
Finally, we'll meet Rafał Milach, nominated for a show called Refusal, for which the Polish artist explored the former Soviet countries of Eastern Europe, Belarus, Georgia, Azerbaijan, Ukraine, and his home country too, to explore how direction and authority are exerted on citizens in the ongoing post-Soviet power vacuum. Milach found a very healthy, if that's the word, cult of the leader, reliance on surveillance and the strange visual language of games designed to teach the young to blind the world with their mastery of chess.
Refusal takes place in post-Soviet region, but it's beyond geography because we live in very much political times today. As far as I come from this region, I decided to tell stories from this particular place, but the mechanisms that I'm visually investigating are really beyond geography. What Refusal focuses on is collecting these traces of the fall of the communism, of the Soviet Union, and actually it's kind of a very long-term process because it's been more than 26 years since the, well, almost 26 years since the collapse of communism and since the collapse of Soviet Union, and the transition is still ongoing thing over there. So it's some sort of contemporary version of this strange relation between authorities and society.
This work is concerned with ideas of control and manipulation. Control and manipulation, I guess the whole point of them, if they're done well, is that you don't know they're happening or that you can't really see them. So this presents an interesting challenge to a photographer or someone that's working in photography such as yourself. So what have you done, Rafał, to kind of show people your processes? Because we've got some unusual artifacts and photographs in this room. How did you, obviously this project, I presume, came from your interest in ideas of manipulation and control, rather than seeing an image, liking it, and then realizing it was about control. So tell us how you started to tackle the themes that you wanted to talk about and show.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you're right. It's a lot about camouflage. It's a lot about the object, the architecture, or some schemes applied to some social behaviors. It seems that they really lost their innocence and they become very much defined. So what I do is collecting all these objects and loading them with information and context so we could actually realize that we are surrounded but by different sorts of ideologies, with myself included, of course.
And over here we've got some very interesting images that look like they might be abstract paintings. They're in fact photographs of artifacts. And tell us about these. One of the ways of controlling people in Azerbaijan, or one of the ways of training young minds, is the chess school. Every village that's been boosted up into suddenly becoming a city has a chess school. Tell us about this. These are strange, kind of candy-coloured images. Talk us through these, Rafał.
Yes, they are very seductive, and I was very much impressed by this amazing collection that I found in one of the chess schools in Azerbaijan, in something that is called the Heydar Aliyev Center, which is sort of community center, the memorial for the previous president of Azerbaijan, which is a purely propaganda architecture building a cult of the previous president. And finding these objects that deal with optical illusions and dealing with like deceiving us in a way, I found it quite nice metaphor or what's going on with this special relation between authorities and society in terms of manipulating our understanding of what surrounds us. So propaganda, in a way, proposes us some sort of alternative reality, and it's very much illusional process. So these innocent objects, which were not obviously created with political context, these are just the school aids, like the school helps. So it's only like making a step back and seeing the context of their of the location of where they were placed or where I found them. So when we clash these two spheres together, some sort of a new communicate is being created, and these innocent objects, they gain this metaphorical political context.
And just finally, we've got behind us this girl who's a sort of a pop star. She's a YouTube pop star. Where is it? And she's singing some very stirring, patriotic stuff. The lyrics of this song are kind of incredible, you know, like say no to short skirts, you know, let's praise our leaders, let's all work together to make more, build more tractors and plough more fields and all the rest of it. It's not exactly subtle stuff, is it, Rafa?
It is not, but propaganda is not subtle in any dimensions. We talk about Ksenia Degielko, very, very popular YouTube clip that she produced a while ago, and she is a part of. She was actually one of the protagonists of a project that I did in Belarus. Called The Winners, which is a collection of winners of various state-organized contests. And she won the contest with this video clip. She won the title of Leader of the Year, and she's a part of the organization that is called Belarusian Youth Union. And I have to say that meeting with Ksenia, which was not an easy thing to do actually, because I had to apply for local authorities to get the permission to meet and talk to her and to take a picture of her. It was one of the most depressing meetings that I had while working on the Winners project, because I met a 14 years old girl who was totally formatted.
You can see all the finalists of the Deutsche Börse Photography Foundation Prize at the Photographers Gallery on Ramilly Street in central London until the 3rd of June, before touring to Frankfurt, where it will be shown at the MMK Museum for Moderne Kunst. The winner of the prize will be announced on May the 17th. And that brings us to the end of Culture with Robert Bound. This show was, of course, produced by Holly Fisher. Thank you very much for tuning in.